There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Into the second hour of the show. We're broadcasting live from the rooftop garden down here at Barasti. So come on down and be part of the festivities. Lots of sport to look forward to. In fact, live sport as we speak. Let's go over to La Liga, where Getafe are taking on Real Sociedad in the early kickoff there. 50 minutes on the clock into the second half. Just one goal separating these two. It's gone to the home team. Molina, after 3 minutes, putting Getafe in the lead. They lead Real Sociedad by 1-0. What's happening in the Premier League? Sean O'Shea.
Still 1-0 to City, 37 minutes into the game, but City are completely dominating this game now. Just saying off air how, you know, they started the game with a high line. They were playing deep into Everton's half, trying to get a goal, which was okay for Everton at the beginning because they caught them a couple of times on the counter-attack. But since they've scored, City have just been completely dominant. They've dropped off, they're keeping the ball, they're making Everton work for it. Everton are having to press forward to try and win the ball back, and it's just creating that space in behind. And City have just been very, very clever and very patient and being very, very dominant. But we're approaching 40 minutes and it's still 1-0 City.
No live cricket for you, no live rugby as yet, but there is rugby coming up.
Yeah, kicking off shortly in the European Champions Cup. Five fixtures today. Early kickoffs, Tom, are both in Pool 3. It's Glasgow Warriors at home hosting Lyon, and Cardiff Blues are taking on Saracens. A couple of late kickoffs we'll talk about later. And then a couple of results actually from the Champions Cup last night. Exeter Chiefs were too strong for Gloucester, 29-17. And Ulster had a good win over Scarlets, 30 points to 15. Action also in the Challenge Cup. We'll bring you all the tries as they come through this afternoon.
Let's continue the conversation about all things football. We've got Premier League action for you. We've got La Liga action for you. We've got coming up later on at 9:30 this evening, Fulham against West Ham. So stay tuned for that one. And action before then, live from 7. But plenty going on here in the UAE. Obviously, we've got the FIFA Club World Cup taking place down in Abu Dhabi, featuring clubs from all over the globe. And happy to say as well that grassroots football is continuing its rise here at all standards. That's thanks to the impact of a number of individuals who contribute to football here in the region, and more so the Northern team at Dubai City Football Club, or City FC here in Dubai. We're joined now by the Director of Football and Managing Director, Terry Kidd, joins us live. Good to have you on board as all.
Cheers, thanks Tom.
Thanks very much indeed for your time. Sure. We sort of do it round about now, don't we? We have a little look back at the year that was.
We
as
sat
well.
Here this time last year,
exactly
by the way.
Exactly that, yeah. And things were so buoyant for you last year, yeah. At the end of 2017. So interested to know how we sit at the end of 2018. Has it been a good year?
Yeah, very good. In terms of outcomes, I mean, that's you know, predominantly how we can measure our success. We as a club ourselves, we were very... very lucky, very proud to have a number of players go on to better their careers beyond City Football Club, whether it be in the US on a football scholarship, or whether it to be to attain a professional football contract with a kid that signed a 2.5 year deal at Mansfield Town. So for that's a massive success story. So this year we're looking to ramp up the programming. We're running a very cool initiative in February, which is a Dubai Football Showcase. Which has been driven by a number of things, and it goes way beyond City FC. Let me be very clear about that. Beyond the successes that we've seen through our club, there's other players that are playing professional, other players that have gone to the US to study and play through their pathways from the clubs and academies in Dubai. So we've been inspired by that, and we've had a real long, hard think. We've run a model that we think can work for the players here. Whereby we bring the coaches to Dubai to sort of bridge the gap of exposure, because, you know, to get a trial or an opportunity once a year just fundamentally isn't enough. We know that, you know, the queue of talent just goes way further beyond that. So through our contacts, through relationships, through hard work, we're bringing six UK pro club coaches, decision makers to Dubai in February. To mirror that, we'll be bringing six US college recruiting coaches to come here to coach players in Dubai. Now this showcase will be open to players across all academies beyond Dubai, so looking at Abu Dhabi, we've got a large interest from Sharjah as well, even Al Ain, and again this will be a platform for kids to, you know, show their abilities. In tangent with that, they'll be able to show their academic profile, which is super important as well, considering the commitment that parents are making and the investment in schooling, parents demand an outcome. There's a second goal there, is it?
Offside,
sorry. Good eyes, though, by the way. Yeah. Frightening. Vision hasn't gone, Sean. But yeah, so basically trying to create attainable outcomes considering the academic costs, and not only that, what we as football clubs and academies are charging as well. It's quite frightening, and you know, I'm very open and transparent to saying that. So we almost have a duty of care to at least provide an opportunity and a pathway for the players to better their careers through whichever club or academy that they are currently, you know, under the guidance of.
Sean O'Shea is with us as well of the Nadar Super Cup. Obviously, you work with a number of elite footballers who are coming here and using your facilities, using the region for rehab and training purposes. Is enough being done for the pathway programmes here, for the kids out there and for those looking to forward their football careers?
I don't think there's enough, but I think there's more could be done. We were just talking about that off air when Terry just arrived. I think it's come a long way since we first started coaching when, you know, back in 2003 and 4 when we first came over. Like, it's very different and it's progressed a long way since then. But I still think, you know, there's a long way for it to go. I think, you know, the FA and Sports Council could probably do a lot more to help bridge that pathway. I think, you know, the industry itself, I think, needs to be regulated better. Yeah. I think there's a lot of, you know, I don't want to sound disrespectful, but there's a lot of independent soccer schools, if you like, I wouldn't call them all academies, but where you've got coaches who aren't qualified and players probably not being coached in the right way, but then you've got people who are trying to do it right. And I think if the FA and the Sports Council got involved and helped regulate that, that would improve the quality of the coaching and the competition between academies. And then also just try and do something to help bridge the gap between the academies and the local clubs, I think needs to happen as well. Because I've found it, and you'll see it the same, Terry, is that what happens is kids, you know, football's not the number one sport here for locals, and kids will play football really, really often up until about 13, 14, and then because there's no pathway like we had, you know, playing back in Europe, they tend to drop out of it then. And education is obviously very important over here as well, but kids tend to drop out of football because there isn't that inspiration to drive them on to try and make it a pro club. So by doing stuff like this obviously will hopefully, you know, make players aspire to be a professional footballer and give them opportunity to do that.
Yeah, just to back up what Sean's saying there, I think the standards in general over the last 12 to 18 months has ramped up significantly in terms of the provision and the academies are starting to resource the programmes with sports science. I mean, the top tier, we've all got a dedicated sports science coach. That's incredible. A lot of academies at you know, under 8 to under 14 don't even have that access. In addition to that, data, getting players data from games, from sessions to measure effort, to measure areas of improvement, etc. That improves feedback, evaluations, action plans. I mean, back in the day when Sean and I arrived, it was, you know, any sort of interaction with parent was, yeah, it's great, great job, you know, next term starts such and such.
Video on the sideline, wasn't it, as well? You know, handheld videos on the
sideline. Yeah, exactly. And even, you know, video analysis. You know, a lot of academies now resourcing and investing in video, live streaming games. Now, this resource obviously then goes out to the coaches in the UK for those who have got an interest in a particular profile, or, as I say, to the US collegiate way, whereby obviously film and highlights, etc., is super important due to the distances. But no, I mean, the standards have gone up, and kudos to everybody who's contributed to that. But ultimately, the governing bodies have to do more to get a handle on everything that's going on, and you know, a proper competitive, regulated, almost categorised youth league, I think, is what's beckoning in the horizons from the conversations we've had. And there's an individual down at the FA that is, you know, he's going box to box every day to make sure that this comes off, and fair play to him. So I do think it's just a waiting game, and it's a case of just being patient for the interim.
But we've got enough. Numbers-wise, there's enough to back up a youth league, is there now?
100%.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, there is, definitely.
200%.
Yeah, there is. There's no doubt about that. The players are there. There's enough players playing across the academies and the soccer schools that are out there to have a proper structured, you know, professionally run, you know, FA regulated football league. Definitely, it's across all age groups. And that's what it needs, because that's what we grew up in England. It's what most people grow up in, you know, across the rest of the world. Is you have a structured league that, you know, that's governed by the local FA, local council, or whatever, and that's what it needs. But to be fair, like I said, it's come a long way in the last 15 years, and I think in the next 3 or 4 years it will be, you know, 3 or 4 steps further on, and eventually you'll get to that point where you have that structured pathway for the players.
Sure.
Terry, I want to talk more about the Dubai Football Showcase. Mm-hmm. It's on 7th to 10th of February.
Correct. Yep.
Can you tell us a bit more about the structure of that, the format? How do you get involved?
Sure.
Obviously, you know, looked a lot at amateur sport here over the last couple of decades, and often one of the big stumbling blocks is for kids coming through here, there isn't a pathway. Once you've finished at your school, you either have to leave the country to go to university somewhere else, whether it be in any sport, you know, cricket, rugby, football, there's kind of a massive void, a massive gap.
Sure.
What you're doing here, to me, seems like you're trying to fill that void and give them some meaningful pathways to go onto, whether it be onto a university in the US, or, if they're good enough, potentially a professional career or apprenticeship type program.
Yeah.
So how do kids get involved? What's the process, and then what happens over the showcase? How do they showcase their skills and their abilities? Is it games? Is it simulations? Is it just training? How does it all work and come together?
So first and foremost, for me, just to shine exact total clarity on how this whole thing will operate, is that We're merely the guys that are just facilitating this. We're the guys that are sponsoring these coaches to come over. We've, as I said earlier, we've been encouraged by the traction and the success stories that players beyond City FC have made, and the noise that they're making. For example, we had a kid that's just represented England Schoolboys. That's unbelievable. You know, that's a kid that grew up in Dubai. I think he's 14 or 15 now. He's representing England Schoolboys, and that's an incredible outcome for that individual. I think he's signing a pro contract in the summer, you know, and that this has encouraged us. You know, organically, we've seen our own successes come through our own programs. Beyond, you know, looking over the wall, we've seen other academies that have advanced players to go and play professional as well, and in the US. So again, the objective is how can we marry all of these different elements and components and almost non-negotiables, especially as it relates to academics, to provide the ultimate showcase for these coaches to come in. So to answer your question, so they will be coached by these coaches. There will be information sessions on, let's say, recruitment. I doubt a parent, with all due respect, knows the process of recruitment. We're sending three kids to Preston in January. The level of documentation, it was like a phone book. It's not like the days when Sean and I would probably go with a pair of boots and say, yeah, you know, is anything going, guys? You'd probably get a sniff, you know. So the due diligence these days, it's turned tenfold. So I think educating the player and the parent as it relates to, well, how do you get to a trial? How do you get, you know, your profile out to a college that's either Division 1, 2 or 3 based on your profile? So that there'll be a lot of education on that as well, which, you know, we open the door for the parents as well so that they can participate. In terms of coaching, there'll be, you know, technical elements, there'll be tactical elements, but there will be a lot of gameplay, be a lot of in-house games. Obviously, the coaches are here to scout. The coaches are fundamentally here to find a player, which is exciting for us. You know, we are aware that we could, you know, get in our phone books. I'm sure Sean's, you could think of two or three already. Bring some lads over, enjoy a week in Dubai, and out they go. What outcome do we get? Nothing. That's the danger of this model, is that if there's no outcomes, if there's no hint of, right, this could have traction, it's a dangerous model for us. So we've been sure to carefully identify profiles, decision makers that are really going to endorse what we're trying to do, really immerse the opportunity, really, really understand the climate and the tangibles that come with living here, and you know, with the intent to potentially bring some names back to the UK or back to the US.
I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment, because they're talking about this model. It's not just football; we're seeing it in all sport. In fact, here, the challenge is, you know, you boys give 100%, 110% of your efforts to building those structures, to creating those pathways, to improving the standards for your game here in the region. We're seeing it being done with rugby, cricket, hockey, netball, and all the other sports out there as well. But the end game is taking young talent that will move on from here. That's the goal. There's no we talk a lot about grassroots and retention of that talent, but the end game is that they've got to move abroad in order to see that. Is there anything wrong with that? Is that any different from anywhere else in the world where there are opportunities the world over?
I'm going to let you go first there, Terry.
Yeah, so I think it goes back to what Sean said just a minute ago, whereby kids tend to invest their focus in other areas around 14, I would say 15.
Okay.
So for any academy or club, let's say we're talking commercials now. You know, for any academy or club to sustain itself, with the risk of, you know, okay, we're pipelining players out to go pro, well, what does that leave us in-house? I think obviously clubs have got to be savvy enough to project for that. And again, for any player to be offered any sort of contract or scholarship, they have to be
15, 16, 17, 18, sadly, you've probably missed the bus, right?
Yeah,
it's fair to say that. You know, so again, your bread and butter is nurturing the kids up to 14. Then you can seriously identify the ones that have got an opportunity here and they've got a real chance. Then that's when you start engaging. Educating the parents is super important. I think there's a lack of that, and I think the parents do need that education. They simply don't understand the process. Yeah, I think we got one there, have we?
No, it's just a replay.
Is it a replay, Mike?
You just stick to this one, Terry. I'll stick to the football here, lad.
You're asleep in there, he is. I was driving.
If they show a replay again, it doesn't mean that it's 3-0. It's still 1-0. It's just a replay of the same goal.
It's 3-0 in my head. It was a great goal, by the way, guys. Yeah, it was Jesus. Yeah. Unbelievable. But yeah, so I don't think you're on the risk. I think in terms of recruitment and the commercial side of it, I see it as a USP. You know, if you're big enough and confident enough to be putting your players out to professional clubs or over at universities in the US, me as a parent, I would want my son to attain that opportunity.
So, I mean, Shawnee, just to sort of take this one on, okay, say you've got a talent, he's not, you know, Premier League standard, he's probably not even Football Division standard, probably the best he could get is getting into professional football here.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what I'm trying to focus on. Is that the focus at the moment? Could it be a focus? Should it be more of a focus?
It can be a focus. I think the point I was going to make when you asked the question there was Dubai is very unique for us because we're all expats, I suppose. So for developing kids here and them going off somewhere else isn't really, you know, a big thing, I don't think, because it's not like it's not like we're all living in our own countries and playing for our hometown clubs like we did when we were younger. But the problem here is that because of the rules around professional football and the amount of foreign players you're allowed, there's never been an interest in taking a young prospect, you know, from one of the academies and taking him into a club. The local clubs here have always gone and purchased a ready-made footballer, usually from South America, with a bit of flair and attacking player. They'll go out and buy them. But as we hear rumours and things are changing now with the Arabian Gulf League, if they open it up to giving... or if they're open to giving passports or residency to players who've been here for a certain amount of time, so they give them a UA passport, then there is an opportunity for expat players, young kids, to go on and play for those pro clubs. So I think that will happen. I'm right in saying that.
I mean, the interest we're getting as a club and as CFC from a couple of the big Dubai clubs, you could probably name them, in terms of come and play us, they've been very transparent. Look, this is our intentions. Mm. We want 2005, they've been very specific about what they're looking for, and in fairness, they're being up front. For us, we think that it's a great sparring partner for us. Yeah. The level of football is what we want to be playing against every weekend, and we trust our own program in that we're not going to lose players to that club. And like we did last year, we didn't lose one, we handed one over. That's how we look at it, and that, for us, that was a success
story. But to that end, can we foresee, are the conversations been having when City FC, CFC could play in the league here?
Yes.
Thanks.
Next
for that
question.
I'm not going to press too far on that one, obviously. But that those are the sort of level, the conversations that are being, so the levels there, and that's the sort of, I suppose I'm trying to sort of try and focus on the future at the moment. That's the next step, is it?
Yes, very much. Yeah. Very much. In fairness, it was the ingredients of the initial conversations. Yeah. But obviously, you know, you've got to start with the basics and the foundations, and you know we're in the mix at the moment. And you know, as I said, you know we're excited to be collaborating with many Dubai academies with the showcase. Just to go back to that particular point and that timeline is where there's a handful of academies in Dubai that have been very collaborative, very, you know, open with us to say, you know, we want our players in the showcase to get X or Y outcome.
Just to pick up on that idea of retention, I know I'm sort of banging this drum again. Yeah, shut up, Tom. Come on, move on. But in terms of that retention, again, that focus, we're all expats. We've all sort of spent a long time here. And there always seems to be that sort of focus of you will get better coaching elsewhere, or you get better opportunities elsewhere. And yet, thanks to your efforts and thanks to the efforts of other sporting environments, we have world-class coaches, facilities and setups here now. So is there also the sort of opportunity that we need to change that focus of people looking further afield or looking outside the UAE for coaching and opportunities?
Yeah, I think for me, I think from a standard of coaching point, there's some excellent coaches here, and facilities-wise, fantastic. So I think in terms of that, I think we have that here. I think the problem is we don't have the structured competition, and we don't have the opportunities for the kids. You know, in England, if you use that as an example, if you're not Premier League standard and you're not Championship standard, well, you might be League One or League Two. There's plenty of football clubs you can go to and have a trial and play for. But here, you could be a fantastic player in the Arabian Gulf League, but because you're not a big name or a household name, there's never been an opportunity for a kid to go and play for one of those clubs. And I think that's the next step. That's the next step, is getting expat kids playing with the pro clubs. And then the next step after that is, you know, will academies like City and stuff, will they end up playing in the Arabian Gulf League? That that's probably further down the line. But the main thing is giving kids opportunities to play competitive football, because that's the only way you're gonna unearth or develop players. And I think that's the next step for me, is getting these players with talent who are 16, 17, 18 years old, get them into the pro clubs and get them playing in the Arabian Gulf League. And then if they play two or three seasons and they get 30, 40, 50, 60 games under the belts and they develop into a good player, then there's always the opportunity to go somewhere else then. Yeah.
And Terry, back to the showcase. I mean, you obviously got the coaches coming in, the scouts, the trainers, the management, etc., from these Division One schools or these Division Two schools in the US in terms of scholarships.
Yeah.
The pro coaches coming in. If you're a parent or if you're a kid that thinks, "Oh, how do I get involved? How do I get in the mix here?" Do they have to? Is there a limit on places? Because obviously you can only cater with so many players, right?
Yeah.
You can only showcase so many.
Yeah. Good question.
So, when does that cut off? How do you get involved? Do they have to show some sort of portfolio or a resume to qualify? Do you have to be of a certain standard? How do they prove that to you? How does that sort of come about? And how can people get involved?
Sure. So we encourage two methods of expression of interest. One is to come straight to us, which you can email info@dubaicityfc.com. You can express your interest. In return to that, you can go through your coach. You know, if coaches are maybe a bit, sceptical about, you know, handing their players up, which I totally understand. I would be one of those, by the way. So we've done that. We've had that arrangement with many academies whereby the players are going through the coaches. The coaches will come and represent these players, submit their details. Now, in return, they'll get a very comprehensive profile document that they've got to submit. Now, that will go from there's some technical information to ensure that we're putting players in their strongest positions in terms of, you know, the showcase. There's academic information that we need, especially for the collegiate coaches that are coming over, and just some personal data as well, to ensure that we know as much as we can, about the individual that's coming in the camp. In terms of the clubs that are coming over, just to quickly skim over that, we've been very careful about who we're bringing over. Now, we are obviously very mindful that we've got Liverpool coming over. Now, how many kids in Dubai are good enough to go on, to play at a Category 1 level at a club like Liverpool? Okay. However, we've married that in with Category 2 and 3 clubs. We've done the same, you know, for example, we've got Burnley coming in, we've got Fleetwood Town coming in, fantastic club. One of my staff actually worked there, so he's got a great, great relationship with the club. We've got Preston, you know, fantastic setup, you know, a great family club. You know, and the same again goes for the US colleges. We've got Stanford University, not an absolute mammoth institution. You know, not only the standard of football there, from what I've seen, having gone back and forth there the last 3 or 4 years, the level of education is off the charts. You know, but that is very appealing for these parents. You know, we're dealing with very smart people.
Yeah.
You know, but not only that, you know, we've got some great Division II, Division III universities coming over. So there's almost an opportunity guaranteed to get some engagement and interaction for everybody. Now, the outcomes, that's down to the player. That's totally down to the player. And that's where the education piece comes from towards the parents. There's no guaranteed outcome.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Terry, Sean, Arch, and, of course, the rest of the team. But if you've got any questions for the team from CFC, from the team here on the grill, then feel free to text them through to us now on 4001. This is The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti.
Let's go! This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It's a goal fest in the Premier League at the moment. Let's get the latest from Sean O'Shea.
It is a goal fest. If you ask Terry Kidd, it's 14-0 to Manchester City. Just sees the same goal from different angles.
13.
And
it's 13, self-exaggerating.
Yeah, second half just kicked off a couple of minutes in. But yeah, the first half ended City completely dominant, just in control of the game absolutely completely. 1-0 finished and just kicked off second half now. See how we go.
And Molina scored after 3 minutes to put Getafe ahead of Real Sociedad. That's the early kickoff over in La Liga. Rugby got underway yet, Archie, or not?
A couple of early kickoffs in the Champions Cup. Both matches are in Pool 3 of this draw. I can tell you that Saracens are away at Cardiff Blues and they lead after 31 minutes, 10 points to 7. And Glasgow are home to the French outfit Lyon, and they are looking commanding after 30 minutes. It's Glasgow 18, Lyon 0. So Saracens and Glasgow leading in the early kickoffs in the Champions Cup.
Appreciate that one. Thank you very much indeed. We are in the company of Terry Kidd. He's here with us. Terry's the director of football at City FC here in Dubai. They've had extraordinary success in recent years, both on the pitch and off the pitch as well, and putting together a number of programs. You can find out all the details on our podcast, which is online at DubaiEye1038.com. AE. But Terry, I just appreciate you sticking around with us to to tell us more as well. We've talked a lot about sort of the youth, and I just want to sort of continue that that focus at the moment, because again, widening it out or expanding this conversation to other sports. And one of the conversations that I know is going on at the moment, in fact I did a forum down in Abu Dhabi with Abu Dhabi Sports Council, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Health as well, about sport in school curriculums and the call for there be to be more sport in school curriculums. One of the challenges that was put up there was the role of schools and clubs. And I think, you know, we've hit on the fact that we all grew up in a part of the world where we played a lot of sport at schools, and then you played for your club maybe at the weekend or certainly during the school holidays, etc. And I appreciate that football is maybe different. You're a little more loyal to your club than you are to your school. But again, is that a challenge? Because if you want more talent coming through the ranks, you need the schools to be on board. They need to develop programs within that school to make sure that they're having success, rather than just losing the kids at the end of the day who go to their clubs.
Sure. No, it's a question that we get often from parents. Again, it comes back to the education factor. You know, we get many parents, should he play for the school tomorrow?
Right.
100% you should. You know, I came through, I'm scared to say anything.
Let's see what Benji does. Ben, what's up? Short of shape.
City 2-0 up. I'm just saying they were completely dominant in the first half and they've started the second half much the same. A great little delivery there, and it's the man Gabriel Jesus, a lovely little header to make it 2-0. Who needs Aguero when you've got Gabriel Jesus, eh?
Nice man to have on the bench though, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to Terry, we're talking there about the role of schools.
Yeah, so I think you'll find many schools these days, they're a lot more open-minded. They're actually looking to partner with academies. Okay. You know, and us for example, we're a partner with a school. You know, and the working relationship and the cohesion and, you know, operandi that we now have is a lot more clearer than it was 10, 12, you know, even 5 or 6 years ago. There was a lot of resistance, and rightly so to a degree, because we're deemed as the guys that just want pitch space. Yep. But actually, we do want to enhance the curriculum. We do want to throw our resources at the schools. And as I say, in return, the schools are, you know, they're becoming a lot more open-minded in return to that. But, you know, the quality of coaching within the schools, of course, is limited, with all due respect, because of the curriculum demands and the sheer volume and space is an issue. So we are mindful of that. But I am aware that beyond City FC as well, there's many academies that go, I would say, above and beyond what the, you know, what the JD is or the partnership agreement might be, to ensure that there's, you know, there is a resource being invested back into the school, because it's just a healthy working relationship. And then, you know, obviously if you can get the same player in your program to fall out and represent you post obviously school commitments, then it's a win-win.
I mean, making that rugby analogy from there, and we know that the UA Rugby Association have brought rugby into the school curriculum here, so more rugby is being played. But again, is that a sort of challenge that you see? Because, yeah, we want to see more competition within the school structure for rugby, and yet we know that, you know, they're playing for Exiles, they're playing for Hurricanes, we're seeing Jebel Ali Dragons and all the other clubs that are building up. How do the two marry each other? How do you create that balance?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because you've got, again, that club structure where, and you'll know from example with your son, he plays schoolboy rugby for the school he's at, and then he has to go off and play his weekend rugby for his Exiles, for the club. So it's difficult when you've got a different environment there. But I think, you know, again, back to what Terry's saying, the schools can probably do so much, and there are a lot of the PE teachers that are probably coaching multiple sports, and it's not their job to be a specialist coach, whether it be in cricket or rugby or football, but they're there to basically encourage students to participate and get them going. And you think they get the expertise when they go off to the clubs and the specialist coaches and the time there to play in a competitive league at their own level, where their levels can be found. So it's trying to find the balance, and that's just that we live in a pretty unique environment here in the UAE. So I guess that's the way it's going to be. And the schools can sort of do so much, but then post school, you know, post the school day and on the weekends, and the clubs really take over and find their sort of voice and give them a structure or a pathway.
Yeah, I agree. I think over the last 3-4 years, I can see that everybody's starting to understand their roles and what their remit is. Yeah. You know, we're coaches, we're not teachers.
Right.
You know, and as Archie says there, you know, the teachers are coaching a multiple range of different sports. They can't invest the time and planning that we do. You know, football coaching is our jobs, which is another topic we should discuss. But I think the parents think we just rock up at 5 o'clock with a bag of balls.
A couple of cones.
Yeah, exactly.
And a couple of fluorescent shirts.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the teachers are stretched. And I think that's just the nature of the beast for those guys. And I think everybody, as I say, is starting to understand what their role, what their remit is, and what the responsibility is.
It was interesting talking to you earlier when you were talking about for the showcase, and you've got obviously the professional clubs coming in from the UK.
Yep.
And then you talk about the pathway through the US system.
Sure.
And it made me bring up an example of someone I know that went through that way and had a very successful professional career after going through that pathway.
Wow.
Now, so, and I'll tell the story and see if you can pick the player. So back where I'm from in New Zealand, it'll become quite obvious quite quickly, is obviously rugby's our primary professional sport. Obviously you can do okay in cricket as our summer sport, but rugby's where a lot of kids can go and play professionally. Football, on the other hand, has been hit and miss in New Zealand for a long time. We do occasionally unearth an odd player, but they have to go somewhere overseas to play and learn the trade. Now, a guy I knew that was a very talented cricketer and football player in his youth, and he went on scholarship to Stanford, or to the US, and transferred to Stanford, which is one of those schools. 2 years there, he then played in Major League Soccer for 4 years for DC United, where Wayne Rooney is now. He then signed for Blackburn, played 170 times for Blackburn, and went to have a short stint at Spurs. So it can show you that by going that route into and he ended up with a degree, so which will serve him well post-career. But
correct.
Here's a guy called Ryan Nelson, played centre-half, and good, solid player, rugged, and had a pretty good professional career. But he realised that he wasn't going to make the jump from a market, say, like New Zealand or maybe the UAE, but he had to go and learn to play in a very professional environment in the US.
Sure.
And under wonderful conditions, time to train, great technology, all the sports scientists there in
the
that US
Stanford
system.
Camp, it's honestly,
and you go that route,
it's unbelievable.
Instead of going into, say, the minor leagues in the UK and battling your way
and
up,
becoming a journeyman.
So again, it's a really good option that you're opening. And just that example came back to life when you were telling the story.
That to me is a result of him and his parents probably being educated. It goes back to that. You know, a lot of our kids look at the collegiate pathway as a plan B. For me, it's making it. It's up there with making it. You know, because, you know, as you've said, the tangibles associated to that are you can pursue a professional career once you've got your degree. You know, how many young pros can guarantee that have just signed their first contract? You know, so, you know, 100%, that's the glory of marriage and the pro path and the collegiate path together.
I want to talk a bit about other footballers here in the region, amateur footballers here in the region, because we talked a lot about sort of pathways and
like me and Sean. Or
I would put you two in that class. You know, you're true pros. You know, on and off the pitch, that's for sure. But in terms of those that want to have a kick around as well, and I know that you've done a lot to help sort of build the leagues here and the football leagues and create competition and training facilities as well. How are we going with that at the moment? We see more and more, obviously, as the population rises, I'm assuming more and more players are coming in who want to have a kick around of a weekend.
You mean recreationally?
Yeah.
I mean, to my knowledge, I don't play anymore. Yeah, that's what happens when you have kids, isn't it? But I think there's about 4 or 5 divisions now.
I mean,
I think Sean's in the over 40s. How's that going?
And the over 45. You're allowed one young player, that's what it is. No, No, like, again, you know, it's come a long way, the amateur footballer, because when we first started, I think there was one division, 10 teams, but there's five divisions now with 10, 11 teams in each division, so there's thousands of people playing amateur football from all over.
Good standard.
All over the world. Yeah, it's decent, like, it's good. I mean, you've got a lot of lads like us who were, you know, clubs when we were younger but didn't quite make it, and, you know, there's a lot of those people here.
How good was it in 06?
Ah, brilliant.
No, I swear, the standard was frightening.
Well, honestly, it was, yeah, it was.
For about, what, 3-4 years, the standard
it was really high. You had some great, you had players in like Scandinavia and
it
Europe.
Was, it, seriously, every game was a battle.
It really was, yeah.
But, you know, in addition to that, there was a real tight social scene as well. Yeah. So, you know, there was a nice sort of friendship piece to it as well.
There was. Which was good. Not so much on the pitch, but off the pitch.
Yeah. No,
but, you know, that was playing at the Exiles when the Exiles were still, you know, the Exiles were still around. So, but it was good, but like, it was great.
I suppose the reason that I ask is, you know, if we look at sort of the Premier League, for example, and there are certain players in the Premier League at the moment who got their break in Conference and lower leagues, who got noticed, if you like, on the Acne Marshes and then went through those systems here. Is there that player pathway here? Somebody who's got through the system?
No.
I think what you'll find where the academies are leveraging is to use these adult teams as a sparring partner for friendly fixtures. Because, you know, I'll be very honest, the kids do miss that competitive piece and that physical challenge, which is the first thing any emerging player faces when he's at a club, right?
100%. Yeah.
Right, go on loan for 2 months. You know, go and learn how to tackle. Go and learn how to take a hit. I know that sounds very old school, but they still do it. You know, our lad at Mansfield's just had that. He's just come back from going on loan. You know, and it's turned him into a man overnight. But no, that opportunity isn't here. I think it's for the guys on the way down versus the guys that are still looking and chasing the dream. But as I say, you know, it's a great sparring partner for many academies. I know many have got teams in the adult league. They're under 18s. Yeah. We don't personally, but I know some of the clubs are... you know, they're up at the sevens till, you know, 10:30, 11 p.m. most nights, and, you know, fair play to them.
Love to hear from those that play in the leagues out there. Do get in touch with the show. You can text us now on 4001. So, as I said, 2018's been another positive one for CFC. What about 2019? What's on the wish list for 2019?
2019, retention, keep the standards where they're at. You know, I think we don't want to stand still. You know, continue to build great relationships in the, you know, organically within, you know, our sort of primary outreach. That's very important to us. And you know, I think when you do start something new and you do have such a bold entrance like we did, you know, people are a bit apprehensive. But you know, many doors have opened this year for us, and it's important that we continue to open more in the season coming, and continue to, you know, sort of leverage those relationships and, you know, build on the successes as a consequence.
Is that something that you'd concur with, Sean O'Shea, as well, from your perspective, from a club perspective, looking ahead to 2019? I mean, we've talked a lot about the interest from outside growing for the football infrastructure here in the region. Is that word of mouth, is that message getting out?
What, in terms of the professional or the kids?
Both, really. I mean, just looking ahead for 2019, are we in a good space?
I think so, yeah. I think, you know, like we were talking off air before, from a professional point of view, we've had a lot more players come through, you know, NAS this year. In terms of like rehab and conditioning stuff. And I think, you know, Dubai is an attractive destination for clubs in Europe because it's only a short flight, it's only 6.5 hours. You're guaranteed great facilities, you're guaranteed good weather, and everything that goes around that. So I think Dubai, from a football point of view, is in a very good place. I think having the Club World Cup is good. I think having the Asia Cup will be great to inspire people to go out and play football, I think, amongst locals and expats. And hopefully, you know, if these changes happen in the league and we see young players who weren't necessarily born here going into the pro clubs, I think if that starts to happen next season, I think we can say we're in a very good place.
And just on that as well, in terms of, I mean, we've seen the impact that players coming and doing signing sessions or coming down to a training session can have on young, impressionable kids as well. In other sports, and I turn attention to NFL, Mark Archer, you know, they're looking to expand their brands by playing certain games in other parts of the world. So we've seen American football games have been played over in London with discussions of doing similar things as well. I mean, is there the opportunity, you think, of, and not necessarily the Premier League, but other leagues from around the world to come here and play competitive or even exhibition games to help promote that interest in the game?
Well, I think it would be good to do that. You know, you read stories sometimes about maybe the Manchester Derby might one day get played in New York, so I'm very dubious about things like that. But I think from an exhibition point of view, I think the teams coming over and playing here is a good thing. And I think it's going to be quite interesting this time, because usually when the international teams come for the training camps in January, they always want to play against the local clubs. Yeah. But because the local clubs are in season, it can never happen. But because of the Asia Cup now, we'll actually have that. So there will be a lot of international teams versus local pro clubs, I think you'll see across January while that's on. And that can only be a good thing. Can only be a good thing for football.
Terry, it's always lovely to catch up with you again. If people want to find out more about the programmes, it's in February, isn't it? Next year,
yes,
is that right?
Feb 7 to Feb 10. So it's the Thursday's the 7th, so it's half day, two full days and a half day. So lots of minutes, lots of contact time with these guys. And, you know, everybody's guaranteed some sort of action plan / evaluation. As I said, you know, I think it's important for the player and the parent to see some sort of return from their investment through the commitments and efforts that they're making.
Chris McCarty will be there. His goalkeeping gloves. He tells a great story.
He's
the greatest goalkeeper that never got noticed in Scotland, apparently.
He got noticed.
No offence to Chris McCarty, because he's probably listening, but he does not look like a goalkeeper, does he? Hey?
No.
Not at all.
Not at all.
No comment.
No. I played in a tournament with him in the summer, which we won. And he was like, yeah, I'll be in goals. Turned up, didn't need keepers because it was Neymar Junior 5. The other goals. Christopher, you're on the bench, son.
Terry, if people want to find out more about the programme in February, if they want to find more about the club as well, best way for them to do that?
Website, social media, City FC Official, DubaiCityFC.com, showcase specifically, info@DubaiCityFC.com.
Good on you, Terry, lad. Thanks so much indeed for
Cheers.
Joining us live here
Thanks,
on the show. All the best for
Appreciate
the rest
it.
Of this year. All the best for 2019 as well.
Excellent. Merry Christmas.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, let's talk golf. Welcome back. News of a goal. Sean O'Shea.
We have had a goal at the Etihad and it has not gone to Manchester City, surprisingly enough. Everton are back in the games. 2-1. A fantastic cross. Everton were pressing, trying to get into the box. It was a poor clearance, if you like, went out wide. Cross got delivered in and Dominic Calvert-Lewin scored a fantastic header nestled into the bottom corner, which makes the last 25 minutes of this game very, very interesting. I think Everton actually probably deserved that. I wouldn't say they've played poorly today, Everton. I just think City have been very, very good. So it'll be interesting now to see how City react and how Everton react for the last 25 minutes.
Do you rate Calvert-Lewin?
I do like him. I think he's a good player. Yeah. I think I would like him to get more game time. I think, you know, we've just talked about youth football and things. I think these young promising players that we have in the game, like they need to be playing regularly. So for someone like him, I think he's done very well. He's taken opportunities that he's had, and if he plays more, I think he'd develop into a good player.
I was talking Everton last night because obviously the big man is now first team coach down there, Duncan Ferguson. His sister, obviously Iris, lives here in the UAE. I was having a long chat with her about the sort of what's going on down at Everton at the moment. They've got some good players coming through the ranks, which is nice to see.
They have. I mean, they've always produced good players, I think, Evan. There's always been, you know, good young talent around. I've been lucky enough to work with them a few times over the last few years, and I've spent a bit of time at the club and seen some of these players like Luckman and Calvert-Lewin when they were playing in the youth team and coming through. They've got a great setup at Finch Farm, really, really have. And I think with Silva coming in, you know, people are a little bit dubious about him coming in because, you know, people saying he hasn't really done anything. Yeah. But I think he's a fantastic coach, and I think he'll do very well with Everton. I think, you know, they've got a little bit of money now. They've recruited very well. They've been playing good football, apart from a little bit of a blip over the last few weeks into the Derby game. I think they're a club that are moving forward. Obviously, got the plans for the new stadium. So they are moving forward, definitely, yeah.
Getafe have taken the points in the early kickoff over in La Liga. They beat Real Sociedad by that single goal, Molina, after just 3 minutes. That one has finished. What's happening in the rugby, Mark Archer?
Yeah, two early kickoffs in the Champions Cup, the European Champions Cup. Firstly to Cardiff, where Cardiff Blues are taking on Saracens. And at half-time, it's Cardiff with a slender lead, 14 points to 13 over the English team Saracens. In Glasgow, they're hosting the French outfit Lyon. Comprehensive half-time score to them, 18 points to nil. That Glasgow Warriors lead Lyon.
Another goal in the Premier League, Sean O'Shea.
Another goal in the Premier League, and this time it has gone to Manchester City, and now it's Manchester City 3, Everton 1. So we're just talking there how it'll be interesting to see how City react, and they've reacted fantastically. Raheem Sterling has been on the pitch, I think, about 2 minutes, and he's made an instant impact. Delivery came in from Sane. Sterling finishes it off with the head, and it's 3-1.
I must also mention it's half time in the FIFA Club World Cup game, which is ongoing at the moment. Kashima Antlers are taking on Guadalajara. It's 1-0 to Guadalajara at half time. ES2 is taking on Al Ain a little later on, 8:30 kickoff local time here in the UAE for that one. Let's go to the golf. Mark Archer.
Yeah, big event on the European Tour, co-sanctioned with the Sunshine Tour. It's taking place in on the border of the Kruger National Park, just outside of Johannesburg, the Leopard Creek Golf Club. Spectacular venue. If you get to see this on the weekend, there's all sorts of the Big Five, the African wildlife in full display during this golf tournament. Just to learn a little bit about more about this amazing golf course and venue, just have a quick listen to this.
This is quintessential Africa, where the animal world is a next-door neighbour to the location for a sporting endeavour that's survival of the fittest. The last European Tour event of the calendar year takes place in the northeast of the Rainbow Nation on the border of the Kruger National Park. Yes, the extraordinary venue that is Leopard Creek Country Club again hosts the Alfred Dunhill Championship after extensive improvements to what was already regarded as one of the world's premier courses. On the banks of the Crocodile River, Leopard Creek is the definition of stunning. The brainchild of Johan Rupert and designed by South Africa's most treasured golfer, Gary Player. Let the title hunt commence.
Round three underway of the Alfred Dunhill Championship there, described beautifully as the Leopard Creek Golf Club on the border of the Kruger National Park. I can tell you, with a few holes remaining on round three, it's the American David Lipsky and the Scot, Scott Jamieson, at the top of the leaderboard. They're both tied at 10 under par and have three holes to play today. Further down the scoreboard is Mark Warren. He's had the worst day of the top players, but did shoot 67 yesterday to be tied for second position. Let's have a quick listen to the Scot, Mark Warren, talking about his round of 67 yesterday.
Very pleased. I think we got the good side of the draw, to be honest, as well. The wind kind of died down the last few holes yesterday, and then it was pretty calm this morning. Greens were soft, so managed to take advantage, which was nice.
What have you been doing particularly well over the first 2 days to put yourself in this position?
I think I've made most of my scoring has been done par threes, par fours. Haven't played the par fives particularly well, so maybe look at trying to play them a little bit better over the weekend. But par threes and par fours have been really strong, so hopefully that continues.
The Scots are taking over. There's three of you in the top four.
Yeah, seen that. Obviously, Scott Jameson's a good friend, and seen he finished strong as well. So, and Doug McGuigan, I think, was the other one. It's nice to see some salt tires on the leaderboard for a change. Like I said, hopefully we keep them up there over the weekend.
Going back to Q School, getting your card there. What did that teach you about yourself? How do you reflect on that experience and now being back in contention on the European Tour?
Yeah, well, I actually think I learned a lot that week. Kind of surprised. It's obviously going to be a long week and everything, but I felt as if I just played golf purely. Obviously, you need a result there. There's nothing else that matters. And I felt as if I kind of got my own way a little bit. Just played the shots I felt as if I could play rather than trying to hit shots that you think should the kind of hole or the approach shot requires. So I felt as if I was doing, I was playing golf again as opposed to playing golf swing. So just trying to take that approach into the new season, really.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.